podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. It's the end of cricketing year 2023. We're going to do a recap of a few of our favourite moments and controversies from the 2023 season. We'll talk about the double Ashes, Australia double World Cup champions, Daryl Mitchell, Travis Head, and plenty of controversy from around the world of cricket in 2023. All coming up on the Top Order podcast 2023 recap. Stay tuned. Well, boys, we are here at the end of 2023, December 20th to be precise. We're all nearly finished our work for the year. We're planning a little road trip to Australia-New Zealand test match, which will be so nice.
Save that for the 2024 preview.
Hopefully they've got some of that watermelon pals again. That was very, very refreshing down at Mount Maunganui. But there is only one place to start, and I hate to do this. Australia have got a couple of trophies this year, Bordy. So going to give you the bragging rights and opening rights of the 2023 recap. And if that isn't your moment, then we've got problems.
No, it is my moment.
Yeah, okay. Embarrassment of riches. I sent him a message this morning saying, you know, what are you going to actually pick? Because you've got the retaining the Ashes, which seems to be quite high on the two of you's radar at least. You've got your World Cups, you've got your World Test Championship final. What actually is it?
All of the above. We won some tournaments this year. I've spent a little bit of time in the room of mirrors today practicing my gracious winner face. So I hope it comes across on the YouTube. Australia men's 50 over World Cup win, World Test Championship win, women's T20 World Cup win. The women went 20-5 across all formats this year, and you know, we retained the Ashes as well for men and women in close encounters. So those are my highlights for my cricketing year this 2023. It's been a good year for Baldy living overseas, winning tournaments. Always good to be living overseas when you're winning stuff.
Well, what's the best though? You know, you can't just list off, you know, we're not all in a position to,
sure.
You know, we sort of framed this episode as, you know, let's talk a little bit about our highlights and kind of the things that stood out to us the most. Is there sort of certain moments from those, or at least you know, one particular thing that felt more special than others?
I think winning the 50 over World Cup for men is the highlight, I think, for me, because it was the least expected of those outcomes. I think Australia would have gone in expecting to retain the Ashes. They would have probably expected to win the World Test Championship against India in neutral conditions. The women's team was certainly expected to win the T20 tournament. So I think the 50 over World Cup for men is probably the most surprising outcome and the most pleasing one for me of all of those.
And you never put a line through them even when they were down?
No, I believed in them all the way, Raj, particularly when they were 0-2. Everyone was prepared to write them off, not me. I was sticking firm with the Australians. I always thought they could play some good cricket and bounce back from where they were. And I was confident that the captaincy and coaching staff were doing the right things, the right processes to get them back on track.
Baldy, individual performances throughout the course of that. Obviously, there's a few that are well documented through the course of that tournament. But is there anyone that you felt kind of carried a talismanic status through through that tournament for Australia? Anything that you would particularly pinpoint as the difference maker in that side?
For the men's team,
yeah.
I think one of the things that I think was really clear from the 50 over World Cup is that Australia have re-emerged as the dominant fielding side in world cricket, particularly in their ground fielding. First two games of the World Cup, notwithstanding their catching percentage was terrible, and hence why they lost those games. But towards the back end of the World Cup, Australia reasserted their dominance as the best ground fielding unit in world cricket. I think for the women's team, we've seen players step up over the course of the year and emerge as future leaders now that we're starting to see Meg Lanning's retired. We're starting to see a bit of a changing of the guard there. So some of those younger cricketers like Phoebe Litchfield are starting to really step up and be counted. She's had a tremendous year this year. And players like Ashley Gardner and Talia McGrath, Grace Harris, there's so many of those women are emerging as superstar cricketers in the women's tournament as well. So it's more competitive than ever, that women's landscape, but Australia are well positioned to dominate and going into the future, I think.
Just to jump on the back of those individual performances, Glenn Maxwell finally living up to the big show,
mm-hmm.
at double 100 in the World Cup, and then his performances in the 2020 series after that. He's he's been really good this year.
He's been fantastic this year. We haven't even mentioned his 100 off 40 balls to set the World Cup record for fastest 100 as well. So he's had a tremendous year. I think this World Cup, he has lived up to his reputation that he's carried with him his whole life. And whether or not you believe that he gave himself the nickname the Big Show or it was foisted upon him, he certainly lived up to it in this tournament. And I think that's a real legacy for him for the rest of his career.
Since we're on Australia, it doesn't have to be Bawley that answers this. I've been thinking about this a bit, you know, sadly having to reflect on the number of trophies that they've got in their cabinet at the moment and the prospect of them holding all three men's titles next year, which is even...
Is that worse than England holding all three or similar?
I think it is worse personally for me, certainly with my... English connections as well, that, you know, I've had a bit of a softer side for England than I certainly do
for
Australia.
You've never that on the podcast. That's
no. It's still all about New Zealand for me. But look, in a serious note, do you think we're like underestimated like the historical significance of this Australian side? Like, I feel like for years now we've been talking about them and their weaknesses, really. I think we've been saying, you know, that they're short on this. The T20 World Cup, we underestimated them. The ODI World Cup, no one kind of thought that they were going to win. You know, we jokingly, in the most part, make jokes about guys like David Warner and all of those kind of players. But we always hark back to the 90s and the 2000s and the strength of those sides. But this Australian core of this group now, they're winning, like, maybe not the amount of games that those sides won and kind of the winning streaks of them, but they're winning the trophies to the same level as some of those players over this course of time.
Yeah, I heard a really good comment on another podcast the other day that said that Australia weren't the best team in the tournament, but they were the best tournament team. Mm. And I think it is that ability to win those clutch moments. And you look at the people that they've got on the park. We've just recorded our IPL auction recap. We're talking about guys that literally have taken the biggest amount of money in that mini auction. The two seamers, you've got Travis Head, who's got picked up as well. And then
Hazelwood would have been there if he was available, I'm sure.
No, Hazelwood got passed in.
No, but he got passed in because he's having a baby, I think, at that time and not unavailable.
He'll miss half the tournament.
Yeah. But then, you then look at the fact that Maxwell's got a gig, Warner's got a gig. You know, so pretty much all of their players, all of their side command those big salaries in the IPL because they have got that ability in clutch situations. So maybe we do underestimate it, and maybe it's because of their dominance in the, particularly for our generation, maybe it's because of their dominance through the 90s and 2000s that we kind of just expect it. And the fact that they have had a little bit of a quieter patch, I suppose, maybe surprises a little bit.
Well, my hot take on it is that I think that they're a side that shows a little bit of humility, which is not what we've seen with a lot of Australian sides of the past, whether that's, you know, because of certain events that have happened in the last few years. They're a little bit more introspective. If you look at guys like Travis Head, who have had massive impacts, guys like Pat Cummins, these guys are more, they're quieter guys. They're not going to go out there and puff their chest out and talk about how good they are, but they are still very, very good. And when they need to turn on an absolute performance, they can do it. When it gets to those semi-finals, those World Cups, they won the games in the field. It's like they managed to go back to those, you know, early 2000s sides where games were won in the warm-ups, not in the actual game, and they were really on. I do want to talk about Travis Head. He is on the run sheet for a little bit later, but I might as well get him out now. Massive big game player this year. He's been incredible this year. The 163 in the World Test Championship final, the 139 in the ODI World Cup final, as well as the other hundreds he scored when he was there.
Was he man of the match in the semi as well?
He man of the match in the semi and the final. Yeah. And his first World Cup game was the game against New Zealand where he came in and bashed New Zealand and got 100. Australia needed to win that game, right? Their spot in the semi-final at that stage wasn't assured, and he came out and dominated that game, bossed New Zealand in that game.
But for me, you know, the last 5 years, looking back at, you know, 2018, he's just been an add-on player for me. You know, he's just been there. He hasn't been, an absolute must-have player. He's there. He's performed every now and then. But he has, this year for me, ascended into an absolute must-have player. And he's going to be a future leader of this Australian side as well. He's not 30 yet.
Mm. Can I add another name to that that's really impressed me this year is Mitchell Marsh. He impressed 2 years ago in the T20s. He impressed last year in the ODIs. He's really impressed me in the test scene this year since he won a spot in the side. Like, he dominated Pakistan the other day in a wicket that wasn't particularly easy for batting. I think, you know, the fact that he outscored Pakistan in the second innings by himself, scoring that 90. I think he got that in the first innings, but that's by the by. He has really impressed me. And as good as Cameron Green is, Cameron Green is in an absolute dogfight to get himself back into that test side, because Marsh has just made every post a winner since he's come back into the team.
Yeah, he's like Shane Watson 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Except he can probably do a little bit better in the reviews.
Yes, well, that wouldn't be hard. Mm. Talking of reviews, I think we'll keep the Australia theme. My highlight, I think, is the double Ashes. I think is a spectacle across the English summer. Look, it was absolutely quality. The way it was scheduled was superb, that you got that, you know, interspersed cricket all throughout the summer. There wasn't a week without a big game. From a personal highlight perspective, I just thought the quality of the test cricket was superb. You know, let's not go into all the what ifs and whatnot, but Stuart Broad bowing out with a both the mess script for me, a six with his last ball and a wicket with his last ball. Caught Bairstow in a victory at the Oval, and then he gets to go and have a beer with his great mate. I think was fantastic. And then I also thought the England women's performance in the Ashes, having lost the Test match, which was the first match of the series, an 8-all draw on points, with Australia obviously keeping the Ashes, but England coming back to win 4-3 on victories across the seven matches, with Nat Siverbrunt, who went to the WCL and did, you know, brilliant things as well. Mm. You know, she got 400 runs, I think, at nearly
had a terrific
nearly
year.
60 in that Ashes was sensational. So I guess an Australia England theme again. It was a fantastic summer of cricket, and you guys must have liked to spin as Sophie Eccleston as well through the course of that tournament as well, that series, 20 wickets at 20, including a 10 wicket haul in the test match as well, which was fantastic.
Can I ask you on a wider English perspective, how do you kind of rate this year? Because it's been, I feel like there has been some really good, like, it's been an up and down one. And, you know, we've just seen a big disappointment in the World Cup. But we saw, you know, the baseball revolution has kind of caught fire. And, I mean, that's not been just this year. But, like, that test form that we thought might only last a short time has actually maintained. And, you know, whatever you want to say about the Ashes, by the end of that Ashes, we certainly felt that England had the momentum and were going to win that series. Even, you know, if there'd been one more test, you would have felt like England was going to win that test. But I guess on overall picture, you know, even looking at like the 100 and stuff, there's been mixed views about that. Like, where do you think England cricket is at after 2023?
Yeah, look, I think the rhetoric that's coming out of England, which I think is starting to piss off a few of the, you know, the seasoned journalists, is that we've got to pick one format and reset it and become good at it. And you've got other teams like Australia who now are going to, you know, hold all three, all three championships potentially.
I'm going to hold them. Let's settle down.
Yeah.
Music to my ears. Just keep talking about that, boys. That's fantastic.
So I think it's been a really, really a mixed year, I think. I think disappointed in the showing at the 50 over World Cup. And then, you know, off the back of it, we go to West Indies and it looks like we're going to implode there as well. And then we've just started to come good again. But the test match rise for me, and look, I don't want to spoil the 2024 preview, but we've got a big series coming up in India. You know, that's going to be a test of baseball, really. Baseball on the road, I think, is going to be he's going to be key. But look, I think we're in a reasonable place. We've got some talent coming through in all three formats. I think a little bit like what Australia have done and are doing at the moment, and I think other teams might start to take stock in this, is you've probably got a situation where the games aren't that different. You don't actually need three different sides. You can have a core group of players, a little bit like Australia have got, that can play three format three formats of cricket and be successful. So I think we'll start to see that, particularly with the likes of a Harry Brook coming through, particularly with the likes of, you know, Gus Atkinson potentially coming into the fold from that perspective. A couple of others as well. Ben Duckett's just out there for the one dayers. Mm. Will Jacks has been picked in the one dayers. Zach Crawley's been picked in the... So I think they're going to actually go, hold on, we might have a nucleus here of, you know, seven or eight guys that could be in all three squads. So it's not doom and gloom, but I think it's, you know, if you kind of looking at it as a school report card, you know, we've done really, really well in math, and then we've gone absolutely terribly in science. Got a could do better for this year, I think. What about Raj? You want to? I think let's bring the tone of the podcast down, shall we, and go with some controversies, shall we? Before we go to Lippi, he'll, you know, be singing some New Zealand Kumbaya at the end. You know how good the Super Smash is going to be in a couple of weeks' time. But you've got some controversies you want to talk about,
mate. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, not, you know, depends how you look at them. They could be highlights, they could be lowlights. Either way, they're key points for the year. The Angelo Matthews one was great, mainly because I think the title of our podcast, the one where Angelo Matthews was late, was a real absolute banger.
Highlight for us this year, I guess.
Yes, it was. And then that also leads us to that, you know, Alex Carey stumping of Johnny Bairstow, which absolutely set the world on fire in terms of, you just had so many different opinions, or strength of opinions on both sides, was incredible. And, you know, that led to the scenes we saw in the long room. Usman Khawaja looked like he was going to fight some of the older men in that long room at the same time. It's just all great theatre, drama. Maybe it's not what the ICC, the MCC want to see, but certainly was a big part of the year.
It certainly helped our video reviews and our YouTube watches when that happened. They seemed to skyrocket when everyone was looking for more and more content. So we certainly appreciated that. I mean, do they, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm more on your side of things, that I find all of that stuff quite entertaining in terms of all the off-field stuff. Is it, like, does that mar any of those? Like, do you guys look back at that and think, oh, like, we don't want to remember those moments?
I don't know about not remembering those moments. I think we were always going to talk about that when we think about that series. I think a little bit like, and again, this is pretty one-eyed, but when I think back about the 2005 series, I think about Edgbaston and Australia needing three to win, and, you know, that the hand being off the bat and a catch down the leg side, and I think about Ricky Ponting's run out by Gary Pratt, which he got very annoyed about. So you think about those moments.
McGrath stepping on the ball on the warm-up.
McGrath stepping impactful. On the ball, Kevin Peterson's impact on this. So you think about some of those big talking point moments, and like I think Stuart Broad said to Alex Carey, you know, this is what you'll be remembered for, and I guarantee that is going to be in his Crick Info player profile until he retires. It will be so there is a storytelling element about all of this that will remain in the game. But I think what it has done has detracted from the cricket that was played in that series to an extent. And I think if I actually look back at it, and I did today, because I was trying to kind of go back through the year, and I was trying to think when 2023 started, and I found it was January. Genuinely, I couldn't remember when our 2020 World Cup victory was, because I went over to the MCG for that. It was November 2022. It seems to have been like a dog year from a cricketing perspective. It's gone so quickly. But look, fantastic things to talk about, but the cricket in that series, when you go back and look at the scorecards, and you look at the first test was when Ben Stokes declared and there was 25 runs in it. And you know, and you go through the ebb and flow of that series, that's what I think I'll remember.
Lyon and Cummins partnership, some great cricket.
When you mention entertainment, I think what it actually is, it's, you know, that's the event. It's how the players and teams react afterwards on the field. You had Stuart Broad absolutely going, Pat Cummins going, Alex Carey. They now have to execute under pressure, watching them do it. Another great example is the David Warner, Mitchell Johnson stuff that's just happened here. I was glued to that first innings watching David Warner bat. I watched pretty much that whole innings of his 100 in that first day, executing under pressure. It just adds another level to it, not just the cricket, it's the mental side of it as well.
Mm. Yeah. And look, there's a, you know, a fictional reference here to the, my favourite TV show, The West Wing. There was a quote in there around, you know, the public will vote and that they're fed up of a presidential sex scandal, but the gossip magazines have gone through the roof in terms of their circulation. And that, and that's what you're alluding to, you know, from a YouTube perspective, from a content perspective, when there's a bit of controversy, it actually helps the theatre. But yeah, I think it's looking back at the cricket and remembering the quality of that that's the important thing from a fan perspective.
Just the Sorkin seasons, right?
I watch all of them, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, the first four, when it's Sorkin at the helm, yeah, absolutely quality. Get on the Newsroom as well. Very good whilst we're doing Sorkin recommendations.
Good show, Newsroom, yeah.
Yeah.
Endorse that.
Lippy, what do you want to talk about? Highlights and Raj, and you might, if you've got more notes, we'll come back to you.
Good.
I think it's... In similar ways to England, it's been a really mixed year for New Zealand. I did the same thing, tried to look back, like when did the New Zealand season sort of start for 2023? Like what point were we? And yeah, you know, like it started with that actually pretty dull drawn series against Pakistan, drawn test series where I think New Zealand kind of had the better of that series probably, but you know, both sides were in a pretty low spot, I think, their test sides, and I don't even, you know, by the time we now like look back at how our test year went, I don't know that we've really progressed from that test season. So yeah, it's been a bit of a mixed year. You know, you look at the White Ferns as well. They've had, after showing some promising signs in 2022, they've had a pretty disappointing 2023, kind of first losses against different sides, Pakistan and stuff. And, you know, and Sri Lanka as well, another side who actually, when you know, Chamari Atapattu, if we're going to talk about women's players who've burst onto the scene, she's been remarkable this year and beating England as well and beating New Zealand. So, you know, I think, probably, I said to you earlier today, Raj, where do you think this New Zealand year kind of stacks up in terms of like meeting expectations? You know, has it been a disappointment? Has it been about where we kind of thought we were? Because there were some big highs and some big positives that I like, big moments that I have enjoyed, which I'll probably get to in a minute.
Yeah, I've got down here mixed results, test and ODI or test and one day formats. I think a lot of series that we played this year, we played with a lens focusing on the World Cup. We was more building squads, putting players in different conditions. I'm not necessarily a fan of that, but it seems like it was that kind of year for us. The with the World Cup, I think we finished the World Cup about where I thought they would prior to the World Cup, you know, making that semi-final and that sort of being it. I did kind of fall into the trap of thinking that they could win it all after the first three or four games there. But look, they finished about where I thought they would in the World Cup. I think a big thing that, you know, we lose sight of is the contract saga that we had with Trent Bolt, Colin de Grandhomme and Martin Guptill, less so with Guptill, but you know, Bolt and Colin de Grandhomme would probably be bigger parts of those teams that played this year had they been available for, you know, parts of it. So it was a big distraction as well. It would have, you know, put the spanner in a lot of plans that the coaching staff would have had for this season, not having those players available for every match. So yeah, I think it's a so-so season. I'm definitely looking for a jump when we're looking forward to 2024, though.
I think you asked about highlights and things, I loved that World Cup because of I loved it from a nostalgia point of view, almost. Like I think us doing daily episodes kind of helped with that for me, because you know, it sort of brought me back to the first days of watching cricket, and when you just are up all night watching games and you know, I pretty much didn't miss a ball live of that New Zealand World Cup, which, you know, took its toll by the end of it in terms of sleeping hours and things. But, you know, I just loved the experience of that. But I actually, you know, there was the England Test with Wagner having his moment. Kane was superb throughout. But actually, I think my highlight really was Daryl Mitchell. I mean, I mentioned him just in our IPL preview about how consistent he's been, but you know, I went back and thought, okay, like this across this calendar year, you know, I feel like he's been excelling in all formats, and he's been doing it for a while. And yeah, so for this calendar year, he's played 48 matches for New Zealand in this calendar year, which is remarkable. He's in every single side. He's, I guess, because maybe at the start of 2023, he wasn't a guy who you were like, oh, well, he needs to rest, like in the likes of the Canes and the Southies and some of these other guys who have been around for a long time. They're the ones who kind of not necessarily get to skip series, but they're players that you sort of think, okay, well, you know, we can rest them for a series because we know what they can do and all that kind of stuff. Mitchell, I think, has now, like by the end of the year, he's missing this this ODI series that's happening right now against Bangladesh. He's kind of pushed himself into that realm. But he's averaged 41 across all those formats, strike rate of 89. He's got almost 2,000 runs. And the next for New Zealand is Conway with 1,321. I mean, he's only played 39 matches, but Latham's played similar number, 1,286. And Williamson, remarkably, has 1,100 runs from 14 games. So, like, I mean, and, you know, and he's averaging almost 62. But I think the thing that stood out for me about Mitchell was that strike rate of 89. And it sort of alludes to what you were saying before, Binksy, about the way that people are playing their cricket. And I think Daryl Mitchell absolutely just kind of hits all of those categories in terms of he plays the same game, whether it's a test. Like, we saw it in Bangladesh just recently where, you know, he didn't have maybe the impact that he might have wanted to. Not many of the batters did, apart from Glenn Phillips and Williamson to a lesser extent. But he still, every time he walked to the crease, he was positive. He brings that attitude, no matter what the game situation is. We saw it during the World Cup. He just brings that energy that you sort of need in all forms of cricket at the moment. And I think he's going to be, you know, he's set for another huge year.
Yeah. It sounds weird, but sometimes I'm watching the cricket from the kitchen and there's a mirror. So I'm watching it on reverse. He looks like Matt Hayden when I watch him in the mirror. That's who he reminds me of. He's got that sort of imposing, almost sort of wide chest and, you know, has the benefit of not being Australian.
Well,
sorry, Porter.
He did spend a lot of time in Perth.
Yes, absolutely.
Any other thoughts from a New Zealand highlights perspective or a highlights from 2023? Border, you've been quiet since the opener. You got anyone else you want to shout out?
Oh, I had my go. I've been happy with all the cricketers that I mentioned.
The other, if we were going to go back to Australia, the other thing I did note down was Nathan Lyon getting to 500 wickets. I do think that's worth a mention, 500 test wickets. I know we kind of just talked about all the nice guys of Australian cricket, but, you know, Lyon is someone I've always had a lot of admiration for in terms of obviously being an off spinner, you know, and I'd enjoyed the love fest on social media between him and Ravi Ashwin, you know, with him coming back and then getting the 500 wickets. Ashwin was seemed to be delighted about that, and they seem to be the best of buddies and talking about where they're going to meet up when they are in their respective countries. But 500 wickets is pretty remarkable, and, you know, to think that he is someone that you know, hasn't always, I guess, been held in that high regard, and he's sort of been like the only spinner for Australia. But we talked about it when we talked about Bangladesh and stuff. So many other sides around the world only pick their spinners in certain conditions. Lyon plays everywhere and he performs everywhere. He does the job in Australia, does the job overseas. So yeah, it's been a fantastic career, and he's talking about, you know, they're talking about him getting to 700 now. So yeah, it doesn't seem like he's
that's mainly karaoke for things. Yeah, and I don't know what he's smoking, but I don't want to go anywhere near it.
Almost entirely karaoke's prerogative, that 700 talk. But he could quite easily go past McGrath. I mean, I think he's got another couple of years.
563.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's 501 now. He's like, he could easily go past that. I think he could get to 600.
Or get a big contract with Levi's and just leave it there.
He could do. Well done, Adam. That's good from you. He's got
a great advantage, doesn't he? That he's playing the one format.
Yeah.
He could go very deep.
Yep. Exactly. And he's behind a really, really good seam attack. So he's almost always bowling on the front foot. But what I've really liked about Lyon in the last couple of years is he started to get wickets in different scenarios. He has been for a long time a guy who held up an end while the quicks did all the work at the other end. He was a very workhorse-like bowler for Australia. But we saw in that Pakistan series, he was bowling people, you know, through the gate from outside off stump again, which is just fantastic for me. I really like it when Nathan Lyon tries to attack both edges of the bat. So yeah, he's come a long way in my mind in the last couple of years. In particular, he's had a really, really good year. But yeah, Usman Khawaja is the guy I want to finish on. He's had another tremendous year as an opening bat for Australia. He will continue to carry the mantle into 2024 as the senior top order player for Australia. And just, as you say, tremendous tremendous nice guys of the Australian cricket team. He's the nicest of the nice guys.
And I just how have we finished this episode?
That's not the summary, but
how have we finished this episode with Australia are the nice guys of cricket?
Yeah,
amazing.
There aren't many of them, but Usman Khawaja is one of them, and he's had a tremendous year. I cannot be happier for him.
Hey Siri, note edit last 1 minute of podcast.
Okay, guys, look, we've got to let an Australian finish after the cricketing year that they've had, retaining the Ashes, holding both World Cups, white ball World Cups for men and women. And oh man, it pains me to say it, but June, Caribbean, they could go again, couldn't they? But that will be coming up in the preview show, I would imagine. So look, it is good night for us, from us here on the Top Order podcast. As we said at the top of the episode, plenty in the feed. We've got our IPL auction recap. Go back and have a listen to that if you haven't already. And the next podcast in your feed in a little over a week's time will be our 2024 preview show, ringing in the new year. So if you're at a loose end on New Year's Eve, listen to the Top Order podcast. Do give us a like and a subscribe if you're finding us on YouTube. It does help others find the podcast in the vast algorithm that is YouTube, and helps us to continue with this little passion project. But for now, it is good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. We'll see you soon. Good night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.